integrity. That's called courage.
Free up your mind. Use your imagination.
All you need to know is I'll get you there.
Learning.
Now that's the stuff leaders should be made of.
Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Our guests are our students, opinionated, daring, and ridiculously smart. They ask tough questions about life and about learning. This podcast is by them and for them.
The last year has made us all encounter death like never before. If we didn't lose someone close to us, we, you know, maybe know someone who did. Death is the ultimate reminder of how vulnerable we all are. All of us respond to it differently, and for some of us it's grief or shock, and sometimes no reaction at all. Today's episode of the Open House Podcast is about dealing with death and dealing with grief. It's not something anyone should have to do alone, and having a conversation about it is the first step towards that. So hoping that we can change it with this. We have two student speakers today, Dhriti and Dhyana. Dhriti Shah is in class 12 and from Bangalore. She's currently waiting to give her board exams if they ever happen. Dhyana is in class 8 and from Mumbai. She moved to India from Hong Kong last year and has some very interesting stories to tell us. Our guest speaker today is Nabonita Banerjee, a practicing therapist for 13 years. She's worked with many nonprofits and mental health organizations and brings a wealth of like expertise and information to our podcast today. Thank you so much for joining us.
For having me over.
Just going to kick off with the first question. You know, we're all very scared of losing someone close to us. Is there a way to prepare yourself for that moment emotionally and mentally?
I don't know if we can ever be prepared, no matter how prepared we are, right? I mean, you know, when it comes to dealing with death. And death is like almost like a, you know, it's as, I mean, it's almost like a misnomer, right? I mean, if you've taken birth, we will, you know, we will eventually, you know, we will eventually lose somebody, or we will eventually lose our own selves. And death and grief or loss doesn't just come in the form of death, you know, just doesn't come in the form of physical death, but it can come, you know, in many, many situations, you know, for example, you know, relationships, you know, when relationships are ending, or, you know, when parents are separating, when there's a divorce in the family, or when there is, you know, when you lose a pet, you know, to illness, or, you know, when you get a diagnosis of a terminal illness, like, you know, like one gets to know that, you know, they have cancer, or, you know, or even, you know, when there is substance abuse or alcoholism in the family, right? So, you know, grief can be experienced, or loss can be experienced in many, many situations. And of course, the one way that we understand death and loss, I mean, the one way that we understand grief and loss is through death. So I suppose that is what we are going to be talking about today, largely. To answer your question, Siddhika, I don't know if we can be prepared, you know, to, you know, for really, you know, for really coming in contact with an impending death that may happen. And of course, in the last year, no matter how much prepared we are never really prepared, right? I mean, you know, because it's coming out of nowhere. It's coming out of the blue, you know, we never, I mean, in fact, even this whole pandemic is kind of a loss that we are experiencing, right? I mean, you know, we had all visioned our lives a certain way when we were in 2019. We were all visioning, you know, the next year. We were all visioning as to, you know, how the next year would look like, you know, the children who were in the class 12, they were looking forward to graduating. People who were in third year were looking forward to, you know, going for post-graduation. There were lots of people who were, you know, looking forward to joining a new job. There were lots of people who were looking forward to getting married the following year. And then with a blink of an eye, everything changed, right? So that also is a grief, right? Of what could have been, or what really happened. And just the whole, you know, the sense of the world that we knew in 2019, like going out freely, meeting friends freely, traveling freely, you know, going to the market freely, or planning your daily life. We almost took it for granted. And with a blink of an eye, it was all gone. So for me, I think I would categorize that also, you know, grief and loss of the life that we thought that we would have, to knowing that will we ever have it again.
Right. Yeah, no, definitely. Dhriti and Dhyana, what do you guys think?
So
I actually found out a classmate of mine from 10th grade passed away yesterday because he got three consecutive heart attacks and he had a heart condition because of smoking. So this took me by shock because he's my age. I've shared food with him. I've walked down the corridors with him. And like it was shocking because like I can still see his face here. And it's a very scary thought. But I mean it's so hard to process because he was here one day and not the next.
Wow.
I
I'm actually like really, really sorry that you lost a friend. I really admire that you're here with us today and talking about this. I know that it takes a lot of strength to do that. I think that does answer our question that there isn't a way to like prepare yourself emotionally and mentally, and when it does come, it just hits you like a truck.
Really sorry to hear that.
I think like for when you're say, I think 16 or 13, or even for some people it's when they're 23, the first encounter with death, whether it's a pet or a grandparent or a relative or a friend, it can leave you with a lot of questions. What are some of those questions that you do have? And are you able to ask your parents those questions, or are you able to ask your friends those questions? Who do you talk to?
So I just want to answer this that so one of the most frequent questions that I have is I like you didn't think you'd ever get over the death of someone, or it's not really getting over, it's more like accepting and acknowledging that they're not there anymore, but they're still with you, if that makes sense. But I don't think I'll ever get over that phase, if that makes sense. And that's one of the questions I get from many people, and I have. And so some of the people I talk to about those kind of questions that I have are, of course, my family, my sister, everybody like that, and my best friend. I mean, she is incredible, so I just ask everything. But also, I feel like it's important that we, after losing someone in specialty, or someone that you love, it's important that you talk to someone about it, and someone who knows, like almost like a trusted person. So if you don't have anybody you could trust, always counselor or therapist, they're always an option, because I mean they do know things about handling these kind of situations that probably your friends do not. Maybe they do have personal experience as well, and you could always ask someone like that. Like I know one of my friends, she's 2 years older than me, and her grandfather passed away like a week ago or something, and he passed away to COVID, and I'm not even sure why this happened, but it hurt even more to her because she knew it could have been coming because he had COVID, so how do you deal with that?
So it this question actually, and even what Dhyana said, actually takes me back to a time in my life. I remember when I was 10 years old, or in fact not even 10, it was just about 9 and a half or something, and I lost a cousin to in a train accident. And this cousin of mine was one of those really, she was an older sister. Yeah, she was an older sister at that point in time. She was my first cousin, and we were a bunch of six cousins, and she was the eldest. And she was one of those really loved, very quintessential, big Didi sort of a person. And then she, then she was coming back from, she was coming back to Delhi, and she was going to come and stay in our place because, she was going to go back to university to do her post-graduation. And when she passed away, I remember it was obviously, it was a tragic. I mean, not only, did we lose her, but she was gone very tragically in a train accident, which was one of the biggest train accidents at that point in time in India. And so, you know, my parents and my, you know, I have an elder sister. So my parents and, you know, my mother, because she was my mother's niece, they had to go back, you know, get the body and all of that. And then my, you know, my father was arranging things here with the other relatives. So there was a lot of chaos and drama in my life and around that time. And of course, while I was told that she's, you know, she's had an accident and we are going to bring her back to Delhi to put her in a hospital to see, you know, whether she'll be in treatment, so when they left to get her, we all were assuming that she's alive and we're going to get her back and she's going to be put in a hospital and then she'll have a, you know, couple of surgeries and then everything will be back to normal. But it's only when my mother and a few of my other relatives reached there is when they realized that she's no more. And of course, for them, it was traumatic at that point in time. And then they called up here and they told my father, she told my father and she told my, you know, elder sister, and they all disappeared, you know, within a matter of minutes, they all disappeared because they had some other things to do. And I was not told for 2 days that this had happened. So while my parents were not there, my elder sister was not there, I was kept at home with my, you know, really old grandmother. And I was wondering that what really happened. And those were the days when mobile phones were not there. And we had that one landline phone and that was also dead. So there was no way I could get in touch with her. And then finally, I got to know through another relative who got to know through some other relative. And then she thought that my grandmother knew. And that's how the news was broken to me by somebody else who was absolutely not supposed to have any idea that this happened, but she knew, and that's how I got to know. So at that point in time, while the shock of losing her was at one level, I still remember, and that feeling is still so palpable to me, that why was I not told, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, why was I not told? And why, I mean, you know, you did everything and you came and told me once the cremation and everything happened. And I remember being so angry at my mother that you did not think of telling me that this has happened. And obviously my mother said, no, we didn't know whether you were young, we didn't know you'd be able to handle it. Plus I wouldn't have been there around to help you and support you. And I remember thinking that this is also not helping, right? So the fact that you hid it from me, you know, is more hurt, is as hurtful as, you know, as her gone.
Yeah.
And you know, and at that point in time, I remember thinking to myself that, am I really not strong enough as a kid? Am I really not strong enough that I will not be able to handle, you know, death? And this is a conversation, in fact, I had with my mom very recently, I think about a couple of weeks back, we were talking about something. And I again went back to her and I said that this is what it left me feeling with, that you thought that I couldn't handle it, or for whatever reason, maybe you were not in a position or you were not in a place. But I think with young people and especially with children, adults sometimes assume that children will not have the capacity to handle, you know, such a big news, right? Or news of death, or news of separation, or news of something that is so adult-like, right? But the point is, but I feel personally that, you know, while children may not understand it in the complicated way as adults might understand, and I also have my doubts, even if adults understand complicated ideas, right? I really have my doubts as in being an adult myself. But it's about taking away, it's about assuming that because I'm older or because I have more years than you, you know, I will have a better capacity of handling such a complicated news than you, right? Mm. You know, having said that, I am not disagreeing to the fact that maybe, you know, adults are adults, you know, which is why they have age on their side and they'll be able to handle all the logistics. But I think just taking away just assuming that children will not know how to handle things is coming from a very, very presumptuous and a very, very power, you know, and a privileged space. Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, you know, when something like death, you know, comes in the family, and, you know, and children are faced with death, you know, of their, you know, loved ones or close ones, I think giving them a space to really experience that emotion is also very important. And I think that is the role that an adult needs to play in a child's life, in giving them that space to explore a range of emotions that might come, you know, your way while you're experiencing, you know, such a complicated part of life or of a situation. And I think that is very critical when we are talking about, you know, difficult situations, or we are talking about loss, or we are talking about separation, or we are talking about death. I think this hiding things from children, just because we think that they will not be able to handle it. So I often question that, do we think that they will not be able to handle it? And I ask my mom also was it the fact that you thought that I will not be able to handle it? Or was it the fact that you wouldn't have been able to handle my feelings, which is why you thought that let me grieve in my own way, let me get strong, and let me, you know, then tell her. And then she's then of course, you know, she said maybe it was that, but maybe it was also the fact that, you know, there was just too much going on, which also I agree. But I think I still, you know, I'm still in that place that had I known, I would have grieved, or I would have had my own time. You know, I wouldn't have had this whole thing that, oh, this happened 4 days back and now I'm getting to know, where everybody else knows and I'm the only one who's been, you know, hidden away from it. Because I think we all have our own way of grieving, whether they are children, whether they are adults, whether they are senior citizens, whether they are senior, super senior citizens. I think we all grieve in our own ways. We all understand grief in our own way. And we all, you know, have our own mechanism, you know, to go through that grief. And that's where the whole, you know, that's where the idea of community comes from, where, you know, even if, you know, there are, you know, members of the same family, you know, grieving for this, you know, for the same person, for a common person who they've lost. Now they all share a different relationship with that person, and they all will have a different context to what they have lost. But it's about how do you support each other in grief, rather than saying that, you know, let me grieve first and then I'll give you space to grieve later.
No, and I think sometimes children are also like better prepared and surprisingly can be strong about these things. I remember when I lost my grandfather, I was 16, and I think I was quite stoic about it. But I think my dad that day at dinner, like, he just broke down because he lost a parent. And it was devastating for him, far more than I think it was for me. So I think sometimes children are better equipped to, you know, support adults also through that, also through that grief and that loss.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, and I resonate with that, because I also lost my grandmother at, you know, just before my 12th board exams. And she was old and she was ailing for a while. We all knew that she's not going to be surviving, you know, another month. And but of course, I mean, you know, when my father had to lose his mother, I mean, it was difficult, but I knew that she's going to go, you know, and let me just, you know, spend as much time as I need to spend with her, because I was pretty close to her. And so I remember going back at that point in time, I remember going back that, you know, I don't want to miss an opportunity to grieve the way I lost with my cousin. So let me just stay with this person, you know, in the room while she's gone. And of course, and as a 17-year-old, you know, handling logistics or, you know, being there for parents, I think sometimes we really, you know, don't really give credit to the word, the overused word called resilience for children, because they really are some people that adults can really lean on for support.
You know, when you do lose someone so close to you, what is your expectation from the people around you? Nabanita, of course, you've said that you want the people around you, and you, as a child, you wanted your parents to be honest with you. But what is the response, Dhriti and Dhyana, maybe you can take this. What are you expecting from your friends? What are you expecting from your family? You want them to behave as if, hey, everything's fine and everything's normal. What are you looking for?
So I think personally for me, I mean, it sucks that the news was broken to you, like from a third party, I guess, because you didn't get to, like, get the time to process it, which is, of course, necessary. And so I think I would expect that I would be told from someone who I trust, someone who's kind of immediate to me, someone who I know can help me get through a phase like that, I guess, and not from a third party, because that would hurt even more, because it's just a downward spiral, you know, first thinking about the person that you've lost or et cetera, et cetera. And second thinking, do they think that I'm not capable enough of kind of absorbing this new concept, I guess, living without a person you've been with for the last, I know, who knows, maybe five to 10 more years, you know? And I think, so I would expect that I'm told directly, but also in a comforting manner, and that I'm kind of freely allowed to express the emotions that you're going through, because it is that emotional time, you know, where you are going through a death or maybe a breakup with a friend or whatever. And you need your friends, your parents, whatever, to be with you during that part, not be against you. It's like, it's not about being one, it's about being together. So I think that's what I'm expecting.
What about you, Dhriti?
So I usually, like, if something happens to me, I cry. So my crying period is 4 minutes and then I'm done. But like, I still feel sad, but I cannot cry for really long. So after that, I'm sort of indifferent about things. Like, depends on the severity, of course. But this is on a general note. So I feel like just let me be, because I'm not someone who suppresses how I feel. Like, if I feel something, I'm going to reach out to my friend, to my mom, anyone. So let me be. Don't keep asking me, are you fine? Are you fine? Because then I'm not fine even if I am. Because now that you're asking me, I'm wondering, should I not be fine? Like, there's that pressure, okay, like, everyone else is not fine, why am I fine? So, so like, just let me, and I'll reach out to you if I'm not fine or if something's bothering me.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that, because there's that phrase, ignorance is bliss. Which I think sometimes that might have happened to Monica as well, where her mom, dad thought that it might have been better if she didn't know. Maybe even from us, because, you know, they might have thought that from their standpoint, it could have been that they didn't have the strength, so they thought, maybe first let us deal with it before we break the news so we can help her deal with it, that kind of thing. But I think at the end of the day, if, say, your friend was, say your best friend of 10 years was actually not your real friend, would you want to know, or would you want to just live with the fact that they could probably be a fake friend? You would want to know, right? So even with this, it's inevitable. You're going to find out that so-and-so person has passed away, you know? It might be from one person or another, but you're going to find out inevitably. So I guess it's that point that it's, in that case, ignorance is not bliss, because you need to know. And even you feel like it's right for you to know. You have that right, I think. And I think that's important that people establish that, I guess. So,
yeah. You know, Dhriti, you said something that, hey, should I not be feeling fine? I was going to actually come to that later, because a lot of times you don't feel sad and you don't feel devastated. And if I was to actually just take a personal example, when I lost my grandfather, he had had Parkinson's for almost 9-10 years. And I was very sad to lose him. But I was also happy that he wasn't suffering anymore. Is there an appropriate response to losing somebody? Do you always have to feel sad? Or sometimes you just don't feel anything?
I feel like sometimes you're at peace with it, like you're expecting it. Like my dog, he was 11. He had a lot of illnesses. So we knew he wasn't fine enough to walk around, eat. So what's the point of him living but not being alive? Yes. So I feel like when we lost him, we were very, very upset about it. But he is also in a better position. Like, sometimes you're expecting the death, and the moment it happens, you grieve. But then when you think about it, you're like, okay, at least they're not suffering anymore. At least you're at peace that they're not suffering. They're at peace because they're not suffering. So you come to terms with it sooner than you should. Sometimes when it's tragic, that's when it hits harder, at least for me, like if it's unexpected.
Yeah. And to answer Siddhika's question, I think there is no specific emotion a human is supposed to feel, because as Namanita said, every human grieves differently, I think. And that's the main gist, I guess, that say someone might grieve by crying and screaming into their bed and eating a pint of ice cream. Someone might grieve by just not paying attention and drowning themselves in work. Everybody has different ways of grieving, you know? And I think sometimes people just don't know what to feel. Or they do know what they feel, but they're not able to put it into words. And hence, talking to a friend, a parent, a therapist becomes way tougher, because you yourself don't know what you're feeling. I mean, I've felt that as well in the past, not linked to grief, that, you know, you don't know what you feel and you're trying to tell someone about it, but you don't know how to explain it. You know? And then I think everybody grieves differently, yes, but I mean, yes, it's correct that, you know, they're not suffering anymore, and so you're happy about that, because if it's almost like, would you rather be burned alive or shot? You'd rather be shot, right? Because burned alive, well, it's suffering, you know, you'd be in pain for longer than if you were just shot, you know. And so I think that does answer the question, that you don't really need to feel a specific, there's no like set rule of emotions, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Nabanita, Dhyana said that everyone grieves differently, and we know that there are 5 stages of grief. Can you tell us what they are, and do we always experience them in that order?
Sure. So the 5 stages of grief is something that I remember studying it when I was studying psychology. And of course, at that point in time, you know, it's like any other theory that, you know, when you read study theories, you're really not interested in it. But, you know, it's one of that. So this grief. So in fact, there are 2 grief cycles. One is the 5-stage one and one is the 7-stage one. I think they are both, the 5-stage one has been modified into the 7-stage one has been modified into the 5-stage one. But I could be slightly incorrect, so don't take me in absolute. But I'll tell you the 5-stage one. So it has come. It has been made by this one by somebody called Kubler-Ross, and they came up with this 5-stage of grief. So the first stage of grief is called denial. You know, when you just get the news that, you know, something, you know, has happened. You know, and this, when I'm talking about grief, this is not just limited to death, but grief that comes in any form, right? So the first thing is called denial. And before I get into the stages, I think what's very important for me to, you know, mention that this is this model has been criticized a lot, right? Criticized a lot because initially, you know, when this model first came up, they said that this is the exact order that one goes through. But then later Kubler-Ross came up and said that no, it is not necessary that it has to be in order. There are also reports, and there is also research has suggested that, you know, some people just may not go through one in specific order, but it happens randomly. Some people may just, you know, go through one and, you know, just leave it at that. Some people might just have, you know, 2 out of the 3 and leave it at that. Some people may not fall into this, you know, grief cycle at all, and they might have their own, you know, their own way of grieving, right? But of course, so which is why it was criticized. And what they are basically talking about, that these are the most general ones that people have observed. So the first one is called denial. You know, in this, you know, you feel that there is absolutely no sense and no meaning as to what has happened. So when first, you know, if I just take the COVID example, 2020, you know, we were all in denial that this is not possible, this cannot happen, you know, this does not make any sense. All the conspiracy theories started coming up. People started saying that no, you know, let the summer season come, the virus will go away, right? So this whole thing of denial, and this is a very common stage, because you really wonder at that point in time that, you know, how will I go on, or how will life go on, right? And you are actually in a state of shock at this point in time, that how has this happened? And, you know, and you are you will constantly think that no, you know that when you hear a news of death of a, you know, when you hear a shocking news of somebody's death, you say that no, maybe this didn't happen, maybe, you know, this person, maybe like I remember, you know, like if you lost somebody in an accident, when you go, you know, when you go, you might just think to yourself, no, maybe the police made a mistake. Or maybe, you know, when you get a news of a terminal illness, maybe you might think that, oh, maybe the lab got it wrong. right? Maybe I need to get retested again. Maybe I don't have COVID. Maybe I just need to get retested again, right? So it is basically, just being in a state of shock. And in this stage, you're not living, in your actual reality. You're living in another reality, which is not the reality that you're in, but you want to live in the preferred reality that this has not happened. And what the stage basically says that, that this denial and this shock is very, very important for you to, because there is just too many overwhelming, emotions that you might be experiencing at the same time. So it's actually very, very important to feel this denial and shock in order to, pace it, one by one and stagger your emotions one by one. So actually mm-hmm. they say that it's actually a very imperative stage in this whole, grieving process, because it's only then that you can actually pace yourself for the healing ritual or the healing process to start, right? Mm-hmm. Then the second one comes in, the second stage after denial is called anger, right? Now, anger is when you start beginning to realize as to what has happened, right? And it is not some, and you're not in your preferred reality anymore. You're begin to realize that, okay, I've got a diagnosis of cancer, or okay, my mom has died, or okay, I've lost my friend, right? But the emotions that may come up is about why me, or why has this happened to me, or why did this happen to somebody else, or this is not fair, life has dealt a very, very wrong hand, and I don't want this. The anger could be towards yourself, the anger could be towards the person you have lost, the anger could be about the situation that you are in, the anger could be also be on, close people, close friends and close family. And you also start, and if there is any, if there's any faith that one follows, spiritual, God, religious or whatever, you also start beginning to question that, is there really God? Or is there really any point to even pray? Or is there ever any point to even follow the spiritual practice?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And therapists and mental health practitioners, we feel that it's very, very important to stay in this whole, the phase of anger, right? Because anger, there is a phrase that says that anger is truly the backbone of healing. If you don't feel anger, if you don't feel rage, really, the other things may not come up. So it's very important, to stay in that anger. But popular culture and our society, and the way we've all been brought up, anger has a very, very negative reputation, right? We are always told not to be angry. We've always been told that anger is a negative emotion and we should never harbor anger. We should always learn to be happy, or we should always learn to, show a sense of gratitude, but never be angry. But anger is a very, very important emotion for other things to flow out, and for other, other processes or for other feelings to come in. After anger comes bargaining. Right, when we start negotiating with the situation, and this I remember I was working with this young mom who was was separating from her partner, and she came back, and one day, one of the sessions, she reported to me that when she finally told her son that they are going to be separating, that they'll not be together anymore, the child almost started bargaining that, okay, I will not ask for that last expensive toy that you would ask me, but both of you please stay together, right? I will make all the changes in my life that I have to make just so that, that situation doesn't happen, right? In death, I don't know when an eventuality of a death, maybe you start bargaining with the universe, or maybe you start bargaining with the higher powers, or, whatever, spiritually. I'm not talking about religious context, but with the higher powers, with whatever. But it's about negotiating that, okay, if I do this, then will this happen? And I'll change this, especially in the whole, if there is a terminal illness diagnosis. Okay, so I promise to not, eat spicy food. So will the cancer go away? Things like that. And with bargaining also comes guilt, right? So guilt, typically, of death. like, you know, had I just taken my father to the doctor 6 months back, maybe he wouldn't have lost his life today. Or had I just not, you know, had a fight with my mom and, you know, left the car and left in anger with the car, you know, maybe she would have still been alive today. So while you're bargaining and you're also feeling guilty that maybe you've not done enough. So that is the third stage. The fourth stage is, which we commonly used word called depression. You know, so I don't want to use the word depression, but because the cycle says depression, I will use that. But depression is basically, it's more commonly accepted, like being sad, like what we are all talking about, right? That we expect, like, you know, Dhriti was saying that, you know, I can't be sad more. I can cry only for 4 minutes, right? So sadness or depression or, you know, crying or bawling is the more accepted, you know, form of, you know, when somebody is going through any form of grief. And that is basically when depression is basically about accepting that this has happened, right? This has happened. This is what my reality is. And this is it, right? Accepting the new situation, accepting the new reality, accepting with what is, right? That is exactly what is. And in that, many people will, you know, respond to it differently. Some people might cry. Some people might stay stuck in a room. Some people might, you know, go to a, you know, community groups. Some people might just talk to different friends. Some people might just, you know, write journals after journals, you know. So whatever way one decide to do it, you know, that is what it is. That it's actually about saying that this is what it is, and this is what my life is going to be now. And the last stage is called acceptance. Now, when we say acceptance is not so much in the sense that, oh, my mother died and it's okay, but it's about the fact that my mother has died, but I think I'm going to be okay, right? So really accepting the reality and also looking forward or moving on to what this new reality looks like and what actions or what my life will be with this new reality, right? Mm-hmm. And in this phase of acceptance, you know, it's not like grief is going to go. It's not like you're not going to miss the person. It's not like you're not going to, you know, not ever think about the person. It's not like you will never have bad days, right? But it's also knowing that I will have good days and I will also have bad days. My bad days will not be an overwhelming sense of sadness, but it's not going to be, you know, uncontrollable. But I also know that when I come back to my good days, my fog. So when we talk about depression, it's, you know, a lot of confusion, fog, you know, all these four stages might come with confusion, feeling anxious, you know, worrying too much. You know, there is this bit of fog, you know, not being able to think clearly, not being able to communicate to people clearly. But, you know, in the whole acceptance phase, you know, all of this, you have bad days, but you come back to your good days where all of this again gets lifted, then you sustain yourself and again a bad day might come, right? Mm-hmm. So now when we talk about all these five stages, it's not contractual, right? It's not like for 3 months I'll be here. Everybody has their own, you know, everybody has their own pace. Everybody yeah. has their own system. It's random. It doesn't have to be like this. And everybody interprets, you know, this differently for themselves. But largely, if we have to loosely tie it up and talk about the grief cycle, this is what it is. And in this period, some people might, you know, some people reach out to different people. Some people go in for therapy. Some people like to join support groups. Some people just like to, you know, talk with friends. Some people like to journal. Now with social media coming up, you know, a lot of people are talking about their grief or their loss on social media in very creative ways, right? And, you know, so this is what it is, you know, largely about.
That was actually going to be my next question, and I'll let Nabonita catch her breath. But, you know, social media is a big part of our life, and real life is often played out on the social media platforms. Dhyana and Dhriti, can you talk a little bit about that instinct to share such deeply intimate moments on, say, Instagram? And do you think it helps? What do you feel?
Okay, so personally, I don't think that's my method of preference of kind of sharing my feelings, because I'm not the kind of person who put it out in public to 1,000 people. But I think some people who prefer to do that, that's completely fine, because it's honestly just their preference. And I think if they're comfortable with it, I'm not so sure why they prefer to do that, but I think it might just be because they feel like, so I once saw someone's Instagram story that someone's grandfather got cancer. So to put them, like, to put, you know, like prayers or whatever form, like just pray for him, put some more faith, whatever. And I think that is what some people want, I guess. They're looking for that reassurance. They're looking for the reassurance somewhere else, you know. It's almost like that thing, if someone says, are you beautiful, and you say no, you want them to say you are beautiful, even though you've said no. You know, it's like that kind of thing. You want them to kind of just help you with that process of grieving, I guess. So yeah, that's my take on it. And I think maybe after Priti says something, I'd like to just add something.
So I personally don't like ranting on Instagram, because you know, sometimes when you put out something sensitive on Instagram, you expect people to react to it, and if they don't, you'll be like, oh, so insensitive. Like, it's sort of like an obligation for random people to help you out, and I would rather go to someone I know personally, because on Instagram, I have, let's say, 800 followers, but I have like 8 people who I really count on in my life. So I personally wouldn't rant there. But then I also know there are people who don't have these 8 people. They don't even have one person they feel like they can entirely rely on. So they'd go out to random people just to seek validation, support, just anything to make them feel better. So I get where they're coming from, but I don't relate to that personally.
You said something, that, hey, you know, you don't have, maybe you don't have those 8 people or those 5 people who you talk to. When you know, say someone has, someone close to you has lost someone, as a friend, do you ask questions? Do you talk about it with them? How do you go about it? How do you support them through something like this?
So a really, really close friend of mine lost his granddad less than a month back. And he had unfinished plans with his granddad. Like, they were planning to go out, buy a gift for his 18th birthday, and he couldn't complete it. So he called me and he was like, Tata's no more. Tata's granddad. So and I was like, what? Because I knew they were really close and all of that. So and then he's like, yeah, my mom and dad are with my granddad, it's just my sister and I. And then, like, so I'm not entirely comfortable supporting people, like, so what I would do is I'd check up on him. Did you eat? Did you eat enough? Did you sleep? So stuff like that, because and like, I just ask, are you fine? Because we're close enough for him to say, I'm not fine, call me. So stuff like that. And I told my mom, and I was like, how am I supposed to help him? Because, like, I don't want to say something wrong to trigger something in him. And he asked me the same thing, like, everyone's crying around me, should I be fine? And I said, no, if that's not how you feel, then don't force you. So he cried when he was alone, not when he was with everyone, because he felt like he had to be strong for everyone around him. So I think just be there for the person however they want it. There's not a specific textbook way to help people. Each one wants, like, someone wants a shoulder to cry on, someone wants a pillow to yell into. So it's different for everyone. There's no way I can help people in one specific way.
What do you want me to do? What is your expectation for me as a close friend that I can help? And as Jyoti said, if you're not close with them, don't eat, you can sort of check up on them, ask them to stay eating, because that is something that happens after grief. But if they don't feel comfortable talking to you about something, don't push them. They're still trying to process that fact, so don't push them to tell you about it before they've completely understood and kind of comprehended what's going on, I guess. And I think I like a point that she made, which was like that you have to be strong for everybody around you to be strong, which I think many people feel. And it's not inevitable. We all have felt that once, that say maybe because you're the elder sibling or you're a parent to a child, so you have to be strong so that your child can be strong, your younger sibling can be strong. It's always that feeling. And I think maybe what it should be is, if you're comfortable, as you said, crying alone, then sure. But sometimes people feel that crying outside is like you're seeking attention, or you're, as you said, seeking validation. You want people to be sensitive and, you know, calm you down that way. But I think it's important to know that it's a bit hard to do that in front of everybody, because you only have that couple of maybe 10 people max who will actually be there for you in these kind of times. And that's tough, but it's the reality, because you never know, maybe someone else is also going through something and you might have not, because they might have not felt comfortable to tell you, and it might have been a mutual relationship you thought, but it's actually not, you know? And I think it's just that fact that you have to kind of understand that each and every one expects something different from a friend, but maybe you should ask the person who's grieving what they want from you, so that you're able to kind of be there for them in the way that they would like you to be. So someone, as she said, wants just a rant in your face, and someone wants to cry. But whatever method they choose, you need to know that you need to be there for them, whichever kind of friend they choose. So that's probably what I think. Also, I just had a question. What do you think you should do if say, and I think maybe you think you've moved on, but you actually haven't, because maybe like 10 days later you broke down. Suddenly a conversation with a person who you've lost came up and you broke down. You got angry, you cried, whatever. But how would you deal with that? That you thought you moved on, but you actually haven't?
I think that's very interesting. I would like to draw from personal experience. I did mention that I lost my grandfather when I was 16, and I thought I was, you know, okay. And I think up till a year I felt that way, but then I started thinking about all the time that we had spent together, and I do write, and I ended up actually just writing something about him. And I think that's when I realized how much I missed him, and how big a part of like my childhood he had been. I don't think there is a method to it. I think Nabonidha did speak of the five stages, and that we like go through those five stages, not in a particular order, and as and when we feel them. But I think that then at that moment, what helped was that I had an outlet, like in the form of actually writing. I think for other people, it could just be, you know, being able to talk to people around you. But I think that would be it for me. Nabonidha, would you like to add something? I know you have a deadline, and you have to leave soon.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we hear the word move on, right? What really does move on mean, right? I mean, of course, and there is we use this word, the whole idea of moving on, in so many different contexts. You know, relationships ending, breaking up with friends, breaking up with partners, death, moving on when you're moving from one city to another city, right? But I think, and I think everybody will have to answer for themselves as to what does moving on really look like. But my personally, I feel that, you know, for me, moving on, you know, I may have moved on physically from that situation, but if I have lost somebody to death, or if I've broken up, you know, with a friend who was my really close friend in class 8, but now I'm not friends with her anymore because we had a big fight, you know, when we were in college. But at the same time, there is a certain amount of time and memories that I shared with that person, right? Just because we have physically moved on doesn't mean that those memories have also dissipated into thin air. So I think what does really moving on, you know, look like, and how do we really define moving on for ourselves, you know? And each of us will have a different idea of what moving on looks like. And even if after 1 year we cry, or after, you know, 5 years we cry, does that mean that we've not moved on? Or does that mean that maybe there is something important I remembered about the person, which made me really miss that person, or which made me really, you know, connect to the person, you know, connect to my values, or connect to, you know, my idea, you know? It could, it can mean so many things. But again, you know, I think that we have put so much focus on this whole idea of moving on, or being strong, or, you know, or not getting triggered by, you know, memories of, you know, of, you know, of somebody. I think we've put so much focus on it that sometimes, you know, we really miss out on our own inner meaning to all these, you know, to these relationships of, you know, which we have lost, or to a situation that we have lost. Because you're really talking about, you know, lives that we spent, you know, in all these relationships, and parts of ourselves that we have spent. So its idea is about, you know, are we really connecting to that part, or are we not moving on? I mean, that is an answer that, you know, we need to really, you know, ask ourselves. But I personally don't think that there is any particular set formula of moving on. I don't think, and I wouldn't recommend anybody to put pressure on themselves that, you know, I'm giving myself 6 months and then I'm moving on, because it just gets more complicated.
I think this brings us to a natural sort of close to the episode. What I'm really taking away is that we do need to be like gentle with ourselves, kind to ourselves, have a support system around us. And I don't think death is something any of us can escape, not only like for ourselves, but also like people around us. It is like the one, I think, constant truth. And there is no right or wrong way. I think together we are stronger. And if last year has sort of like taught us anything, it is that, that just we are better positioned to deal with our emotions, to be vulnerable when we are around the people that we trust and love.
I feel like it's important to grieve, and also to figure out how your close ones grieve, so you can be strong for them.
Thank you guys. This has really been a lovely conversation. I know that it was an intense one, but I think like keeping everything in doesn't help. It's always sort of nice to talk it out. But yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.